Good evening, everyone. It's nice to see you all, and a special welcome to those of you who are coming in from outside to join us. It's nice to have you. So we're keeping company with this poem, or poan, as Sarah said, The Old Creek. Since before anyone remembers, it has been clear, shining like silver. Though the moonlight penetrates it and the wind ruffles it, no trace of either remains. Today, I would not dare to expound the secret of the stream bed, but I can tell you that the blue dragon is coiled there. I grew up on the Texas Gulf Coast, where it's hot and muggy most of the year. My mom was a single mother, and on weekends we'd go to the beach with her friends and their kids. We'd load a cooler full of sandwiches and Fresca into our 1969 blue Ford station wagon that we had named, and I kid you not, the Blue Dragon. The drive was about an hour, and we knew we were getting close when we went over the bridge to Galveston. The bridge went up quickly over the causeway and then dropped right down. And that movement set off a whoop-de-doo in my stomach that meant almost there. It was always really hot. And this was in the days before sunscreen, so we got terribly sunburned a lot. The sand on the beach was coarse. And I remember the feeling of digging my toes into the sand. There were tar balls everywhere and oil derricks just offshore, and it smelled like sulfur. There were flocks of shorebirds feeding at the tide line, and we would run and scare them into flight to watch their graceful rise. Brown pelicans would fly by, slow and stately, patrolling the coast. We'd play on the waves for hours. I loved doing front flips and back flips with the energy of the waves. My body arced and curled, tumbling and rolling, salt water in my ears and nose. Sometimes when I got tired, I'd dive down under the waves and find that still, cool place that was always there underneath, a place to rest. And we played for hours with a beach ball, rolling it, throwing it, spinning it through the air, its colors whirling and moving between us, bouncing on the water. This ball has been with me all retreat since before Tenny brought us a beach ball last night. And it's been playing on the waves of our practice together all day. For me, and maybe for some of you. When I took up koan practice, it felt like a way to inhabit my life. I'd been one of those people, like James Joyce says about Mr. Duffy, who lived a short distance from my body, really from the neck up. So the physicality of the miscellaneous koans held open a lot of freedom for me. There's a koan that says, the leaves of a lotus are round, round, rounder than a mirror. I remember being in the Dokusan room and I bent my body into a circle and I could feel that girl curling up to flip into the, and tumble into the wave, spinning that energy, moving through my body, moving through wave and body alike. The whole kinesthetic experience of that Galveston beach, which had been long forgotten, came forth. It wasn't just a story about my childhood, but it was more of a somatic memory that became alive in my body in the present tense. And then another miscellaneous koan. My relaxed gaze follows the tracks of flying birds. And it was the pelicans and the plovers and the gulls from Galveston that rushed forth. And then, in the sea of Issei, 10,000 feet down, lies a single stone. I want to pick up that stone without wetting my hands. And so I dive down to that cool spot under the waves. With this koan, it was like I could fall through the bottom of that sense memory, find that cool spot again, down on the bottom of the ocean, and then beneath it, into the dark mysterious, to pick up that stone. These koans gave me the feeling of my childhood, which I knew in my marrow, but I wasn't aware of. So I had the world and my own life in a way that I hadn't had it before, because I became conscious of something and could articulate something which had until then been immensely important to me, but unconscious, sort of buried in my body. And this is one way that koans can work. They illuminate the essential nature that we already are, but that we've lost touch with. They can give us the world and our own lives in ways that we didn't have them before. There are different layers to our consciousness that koans help us explore. There's the ordinary layer of personal narratives, our stories about ourselves and the world, how things are and what's gone wrong. It's the vibrant particulars of our lives. There was that day on the beach in Galveston when I was stung by a man of war and my friend peed on my leg to stop the pain. And it really did help. This is the self as protagonist, a player against a landscape in which time and space roll out neatly in support of the story at hand. It's my story of cause and effect. That was the year my parents got divorced, what that was like for me, and how it shaped the person that I am now. Then there's a layer of body memory traces, the smell of sulfur and salt, that feeling of tumbling in the waves, the scorching heat of those sunburns. Here I am blurred with the landscape. The landscape and I are responding to each other, taking each other in with ease. There's no clear differentiation. And experiences layer on top of each other. They become dreams and textures and patterns. And beneath that, there's always just the light, shining like silver, as Soseki says. Radiant, everywhere and nowhere. Since before anyone can remember. And everything, the beach ball, the man of war, the girls and the waves, and you yourself are completely bathed in it. As Tori Zenji says, things can't help but shine with this light. The old creek takes us to all these realms. And as Tenny said last night, it's a poem you can enter at any place in any of these modes. In practicing with the old creek, I can find myself laying back in that stream bed, like Andrew described, feeling both the containment of the banks and the flow of the creek, finding respite and renewal. I remember the stream that ran behind my house, where blackberries grew in the summer and torrents of water ran on the rainy season. That's my particular old creek, with its own trajectory, history, and stories. And then I can enter the poem as the moonlight penetrates it and the wind ruffles it, and a feeling is evoked in my own body, that gorgeous call and response. As Hakuin says, the Dharma of the Buddhas calls for no special understandings, just act ordinary without trying to do anything in particular. If wherever you are, you take the role of host, then whatever spot you stand in will be a true one. Then whatever circumstances surround you, they can never pull you awry. You don't have to strive for benefits. Benefits will come of themselves. What a relief. You don't have to strive. You don't have to work hard or be good. You just have to open yourself to the moonlight and the wind, the rain and the snow. Let it fall through you. And then you are intimate with the way. And then there's the light, the clear moonlight that illuminates everything equally. Creek and ball and dragon are brilliant with the same light, which comes from everywhere and nowhere at once. Inside and outside. And it's the stuff that everything is all made of. Someone asked Dawi, what's it like when mind and Buddha are both forgotten? Dawi replied, the sun revealed in the hands of an old woman selling fans. Anywhere you enter, there is light. Lin Chi said, there is a solitary brightness without fixed shape or form. It knows how to express the teachings and listen to the teachings. That solitary brightness is you, you right here before my eyes. So how do we work with these layers? That's where the rubber hits the road. I think of this poem, Sunset, by Rilke, which points the way. Slowly, The West reaches for clothes of new colors, which it passes to a row of ancient trees. You look, and soon these two worlds both leave you. One part climbs towards heaven, and one sinks to earth, leaving you not really belonging to either. Not so hopelessly dark as that house that is silent. Not so unswervingly given to the eternal as that thing that turns to a star each night and climbs. Leaving you, it is impossible to untangle the threads. Your own life, timid and standing high and growing, so that sometimes blocked in, sometimes reaching out, one moment your life is a stone in you, and the next a star. So there are these beautiful moments when the light is so clear, where everything is vivid and shining, and where the old masters are speaking plainly and directly to you. We all have these moments. Kids have them a lot. And yet, soon enough, you're back to the sink full of dishes and the urgent matters at hand. And yet, as Rilke says, we are left not really belonging to either, full of stones and stars. Living exactly here, today, cranky and creaky, and also in that time before anyone remembers. Both are true. In a wonderful footnote to The Interpretation of Dreams, Freud says, quote, "There is often a passage in even the most thoroughly interpreted dream which has to be left obscure. This is because we become aware during the work of interpretation that at that point, there's a tangle of dream thoughts that cannot be unraveled. This is the dream's navel, the spot where it reaches down into the unknown." And I've always loved this image of the dream navel, the interface between the strange world of dream images and the place of the unknown. This dream navel is where we live, sitting in this hallway between the known, the personal, and the unknown vastness. When we work with dreams and koans and poetry, if we can find that dream navel and settle down right there, we can see both sides, the personal stories, the memories, the meanings, the body, the ways the body speaks, and then the realm of the blue dragon, where the light is always flowing. We're practicing having an eye for both worlds and weaving them together, allowing them to make one whole, empty, and completely real life. So Seki's poem invites us into a state of consciousness that flows effortlessly between and among these worlds. It acts as a solvent to our habitual ways of seeing and opens a fresh state of flow, the activity of the blue dragon. So, How does the old creek interpenetrate with you? How do you feel it in your body? Specifically, where is it? And how have you made it deeply and intimately your own? Thank you. And I'd love to open a conversation. If there are any thoughts, questions, associations, and maybe we can start if Sarah or Andrew or Tenny have anything to say, I'd love to invite you all.